Well, the Snohomish Basin Planning Commission meets tomorrow afternoon, starting at 4:30 in regular session at the Sheldon Richens Building. On the phone, I have staff planners Amir Koss and Ray Milner. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Morning, Leslie.
Ray, let's start with you. The F7 is a technical plat thing. How about reminding us just of the amendment of the Grand Summit Hotel? This doesn't change anything, I understand, physically at the hotel, but it just memorializes a legal settlement?
Yeah, there was a legal settlement between Talisker and some of the property owners to grant access easements to the fitness area as well as to parking areas. And so what this does is just memorializes it.
Okay. There will be a continued public hearing on the amended Canyon Spa. Unfortunately, Tiffany Robinson or Pat Putt weren't able to join us this morning. I don't know, Ray, if you could pinch hit just a bit. There's no changes in the spa amendment, but this time that we are talking a little bit more about the lower village and not the resort core. So will there be talk about how we connect the employee housing through the parking lot to the transit center?
Exactly right. The Planning Commission at the last work session talked about how they're going to move the people who live in the employee housing units from their units across the parking lot to the gondola to get up to their work areas. And the applicant has come up with a couple of ideas, and the Planning Commission is going to talk about those and go over them and see what they think.
Can you elaborate on any of those ideas at all? Or
my understanding is that they've put in a couple of walkways, and the proposal is to basically make them a little more visible so that cars can see them. I think the Planning Commission will probably have some comments on those as far as maybe bolstering that up a little more even. So that's where I think it'll go. But,
okay. Hey, you know, Ray. All right. Thanks for your time. Let's turn this now to Amir. Amir, and talk a little bit about the Silver Creek Business Park subdivision. We're talking about, I think, five buildings here with mixed residential, office, and retail. Can you just fill in some of the details?
Correct. So it's about 200,000 square feet gross, but that includes also the subterranean parking, all the supporting areas, and everything else. It's about 120,000 approximately of total square footage, which includes the residential. As part of that residential, there are 51 and two bedroom apartments. They're all for rent, not for sale apartments. We took this on May 23rd before the Snohomish Basin Planning Commission and actually for public comment, but no decision, where certain things like setbacks, lighting, Chapter 5 affordable housing were discussed, potential for e-bikes, some of the grading that's going to take place for the project, traffic, and hydrology of the project. We believe so far every one of those items has been addressed. One of the things that we'd like to have encourage a discussion on is the affordable housing, to see if if they're going to be providing the affordable housing on site or pay a fee in lieu or providing it off site. That's just a discussion that we'd like to include between the Planning Commission. But so far, we find that all of the criteria are being met, and we're forwarding a positive recommendation to the Planning Commission.
Okay, so can you locate this for us?
That is right next to Burke Brothers at the Silver Summit Junction.
All right. And so we're going to see the office and retail on the ground floor and then residential on the next two floors?
So there are two buildings that are apartment buildings on the second and third floor, and the first floor is going to be retail. And then the three surrounding buildings are going to be retail, a combination of retail and office.
All right. And then in terms of the transit, are we sending buses out that way yet?
We don't have a full-blown service over there yet, but we are anticipating it in the future. And Caroline Rodriguez, our transportation director, regional director, she's been involved in the process, and she was actually a big part of the e-bike an initiative that took place or resolution that took place. It was actually Commissioner Thomas Cook that recommended it, and the applicants kind of ran with it, and they designated a station over there. We're thinking future. We're planning.
Okay. So the staff is recommending approval of this?
Yes.
All right. Let's see. But we don't know, you had mentioned the affordable housing. At this point, we don't know if it's going on site or not?
Yeah, so initially it was going to go on site. The applicant has claimed that it's too cost prohibitive right now to provide that many units on site. We obviously prefer that, but the code does allow them to either build it off site or pay a fee in lieu. So they're still deciding. I'm sure they're just crunching numbers and deciding on where it is. But obviously, we would encourage that the affordable housing, if not entirely in part, be provided on site.
And how many units are required?
Affordable or total?
Yeah, affordable.
So it depends. Actually, there's the way the formula works. If you're providing on-site units, it depends if you're providing one bedroom or two bedroom or three bedroom units. So that number can go anywhere from 20 units to 30 or 40 units, depending on what type of units you're providing. As far as a fee in lieu, you'd probably be looking at about $2.5 million.
Oh, okay. So we're talking maybe bedrooms? Is that a better way to describe it as a unit equivalent?
It's truly a combination of one or two bedroom units, because if you provide one bedroom units, then you would need to provide more units, correct? If you provide two and three bedrooms, then the total number of units goes down.
Got it. Last time the Planning Commission had asked about the setbacks from the Highland, the highway and the wetlands. What did you guys determine about that?
So we took a look. That's one of the first things that we look at, is, hey, our setbacks, our height being met. We looked at it such a long time ago that, we did, you kind of space all the requirements. There's actually a note on the plat that says, as long as you contain all the, I'm paraphrasing, as long as you contain all the development within the building pad, you're good to go. And so the applicant did have a few things encroaching outside of that building pad. This time around, they redesigned it where all the development is taking place. So all the structures are contained within the building pad. And because everything is within the building pad, all setbacks are being met.
Okay. And then in terms of traffic, what kind of impacts are you anticipating?
Traffic, we're most likely going to end up, the engineering department is taking a final look to see if there are any other requirements they're going to require, but the bottom line is we're going to need an expansion of the roundabout over there that's there right now, and most likely there's going to need to be a traffic light or a roundabout in the UDOT right away. As far as the county's concerned, we so far do not have any lights as far in our jurisdiction. It's all been roundabouts, so we would anticipate that's the trend that continues, and roundabouts really work well. As a note, phase one of the Silver Creek Village Center was taken into consideration, which is, so it's not just this project alone that causes this requirement. We did want, again, planning for the future, we want to take Silver Creek Village Center into consideration and as part of this traffic study. And so the combination of this project and phase one of Silver Creek Village Center knocked that, into those two requirements.
All right. So does the expansion of the roundabout then, the cost of that fall on the applicant, or they split it between the Silver Creek development, or?
It's all part of traffic impact fees. So the engineering department, they kind of anticipated that in the future anyway. So all of those things are part of traffic impact fees.
So we all pay for it.
Correct.
Yeah. Real quick, I just want to make note that the Summit County Council hosting a work session and open house this week to discuss what's known as the Klein-Dolly property. This is the 30 acres that the county purchased near Jeremy Ranch Elementary School to build a transit-oriented development. That'll be discussed. Is there any, can you give us any details about what's being proposed, or who's taking the lead on this?
Jeff Jones, our economic development director, is taking the lead on that. Caroline Rodriguez obviously will be involved in that because of the transit component to it. Right now, we're just having a discussion.
Okay. Hey, thanks for your time, Amir. The summer season has opened at Deer Valley Resort, and in addition to the hiking and biking and lift-serve mountain biking, the resort offering and hosting dozens of musical acts in the studio with a rundown of what's going on. I got the president and general manager of Deer Valley, Bob Wheaton. Good morning, Bob.
Morning, Leslie. How are you?
So I'm well, thanks. So the activities opened June 16th. What have we got open?
Well, pretty much everything, and we have so much going on. I had to make some notes just so I wouldn't forget, but... Yeah, the concert series, we have a huge lineup, everything from the Beach Boys to Gershwin to Kelly Pickler to Melissa Etheridge and Ben Folds and a Disney concert, music of Prince. I mean, it's just kind of the full spectrum on the concerts, as well as the free Wednesday night concerts.
Yeah, and I was going to say, you work with a number of concert producers. Then you've got Mountain Town Music, you've got Park City Institute, the Symphony and Music Festival, and maybe even some United Concert shows?
United Concert's not on the books yet this year, Leslie, but yeah, certainly we're open.
Yeah. Well, let's just talk a little bit about that. Given the tragedy that we saw at a pop concert there in Manchester, England, I mean, do we take that to heart? Do we do anything here, or is it Park City and we shouldn't worry about it?
No, I wouldn't go there. I think it's always a concern, and certainly we've been focused on that. We stay very, very close with our awesome, absolutely awesome, in my opinion, Park City Police Department. And they have had some great guidance over the years. They always have a presence there. And, no, it's something that we take extremely seriously, Leslie, and something that we focused on for quite a while. You know, we saw the evidence of that, I mean, going back to the Olympics in 2002, right after 9/11.
Right. But we certainly knew all about the mag and bag during the Olympics, but we don't have any kind of metal detectors or anything at the concerts.
No, we have not gone to the metal detector phase.
So right now we're just using a presence to deter anybody, or
presence, eyes, and verbal for sure.
Yeah.
So there's I think somebody would really have to pay attention to see exactly what's going on, but I can assure everybody that we are definitely paying attention and aware of what's going on.
Yeah, and I guess the difference is you know that Deer Valley allows big coolers, I mean, wagons, you know, come through. I mean, it could
we have seen wagons.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, it could be a real bog if, in fact, we started requiring people to open up all of that stuff, huh?
It could be. And that's why we've, you know, we're utilizing some techniques and some efforts that don't necessarily require that.
Okay, so at this point, it's pretty much business as usual?
Yes, we're feeling good. And that business as usual, Leslie, once again, is definitely a heightened awareness of what happens within the venue. And that that goes for winter as well. I mean, it's you know, this isn't just a summer concert deal.
Let's talk a little bit about the mountain biking that you've got open. You've got how many lifts open?
Three lifts. So Silver Lake Express, Sterling and Ruby, and all runs are now open. We're pretty excited. Gravity Logic came on site week ago today, and they are picking up where they left off on our new Black Diamond flow trail called Tsunami, and we're looking at having that completed probably 5 to 6 weeks. And so that will give us a green, blue, and black flow trail. And so we'll have a full complement plus all the improvements we've been making the last couple of years on our existing mountain bike trails.
Yeah. And these flow trails have proved to be really popular. What? Because it basically, I mean, if you ride it well, you don't need a whole lot of braking.
They're fun. They well, you know, the whole mountain bike design effort has changed dramatically in the last, especially 7 to 10 years. And design is more so that you don't necessarily have to use your brakes. You know, whenever people lock them up, it's not good on the trail for one thing. And it's just a tough deal. So, you know, whenever mountain bike trails are designed now, they're really designed with the turns and the grade utmost in mind.
Yeah. So besides Tsunami, any new runs planned or?
Well, we'll continue to work and maintain on our existing runs outside of that. And we're also going to lay out a new trail from Silver Lake down to Snow Park. So going out the back. So we're going to lay that out. That's going to be a long trail. So that one's going to take us a while.
Yeah. So it'll be up and down or just a downhill?
Up and down at this point, but it may just be one way. So that's part of the layout process. What I'd like to remind everybody, and that's one of the reasons why we're starting to focus on a biking connection from Silver Lake to Snow Park and vice versa, is there's a fair amount of construction up at Silver Lake. And now with the construction of the Golden Hirsch, that outside parking lot is not available anymore. So we would like to ask everybody and encourage everybody to park down at Snow Park, ride Silver Lake Express up, and then ride down at the end of the day.
All right. So season passes, holders ride free?
Correct.
All right. And then otherwise you can buy a daily or do you sell annual passes
as well?
That's correct.
And just as a reminder to everybody, this year, every Wednesday night, we're open for the Twilight Series till 8 o'clock.
All right. So the parking lot, are you going to miss that this winter then, the Golden Hirsch lot?
Well, we have underground parking now over at the Chateau, so we will just be redirecting guests, and all of our staff has been parking over there for a long time anyway, so we have that available.
Okay. And we should also mention that you guys do the stand-up paddleboarding and fly fishing. Is that your operation, or you just kind of contract that out? Or?
It's a contractor with stand-up paddleboards, and they do a great job. Trent is out there all the time and kind of directing the operations and does a great job. And, yes, it on a warm day, it almost looks like Malibu Beach out there anymore. It's pretty fun.
Yeah, and you do offer the mountain bike courses, lessons.
Yes, so mountain bike lessons, guided hikes, lessons on stand-up paddleboard, as well as rentals. And then on the dining side, that's why I had to make some notes. It's so the Brass Tag restaurant inside the lodges in Lower Deer Valley is open every night for dinner. The grocery cafe right there on the lake where stand-up paddleboarding happens is open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner every night. And Royal Street Cafe up at Silver Lake is open for lunch every day.
Okay. The Solitude now, do they offer similar activities?
They do. No stand-up paddleboarding over there. It's a little tough in Big Cottonwood Creek, but they do offer lift-serve mountain biking every Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They have a kind of an ensemble. I wouldn't call it a concert series. It's an ensemble music offering every Sunday there, midday. And then restaurants are open over there as well. And, you know, the hiking over there is just to die for. Top of Big Cottonwood Canyon.
Yeah, let's talk briefly before you go is about the expansion, Deer Valley expansion, where things stand there.
Over in Wasatch County, things are rolling along. We are in constant communication with the county. A lot of the approvals are already there. There's a the Mayflower property is presently under contract, is set to close here real quick. Once that happens, then I think things will really get kickstarted. We're really excited about that whole deal over there. There's depends on how you look at the map, between 1,000, 1,200 acres, six lifts, whole new base deal down there. It's a cool deal. Very cool deal.
So you mentioned that you've got final approvals for Because there's like three parcels there. There's the mountain, which you're talking about, and then there's the north and the marina. And I think you're just interested in the mountain.
Yes. So just on the ski resort side of Highway 40, that's what I was referring to as far as being through the planning process. You know, building approvals are not there yet. Conceptual master plan approvals are. We've been in front of the county commission over there a number of times, and they like what we would like to see there, and so everybody's been supportive.
So is your development then separate from the Mida development where the military hotel would be built?
It's all kind of sort of part of the same thing. It probably took me, quite frankly, Leslie, a year and a half or 2 years to understand exactly what Mida is, how it operates. There's a key term called development area, and that development area is defined as the influenced part of the project. So it's not necessarily right where the hotel goes, but it's all of the ancillary development around it, which also includes the ski area. And then part of that, you know, Wasatch County had to give their nod to Mida in order for Mida to participate. And that was one thing when Governor Huntsman, under his administration, developed Mida, which is Military Development Authority, and that's a state agency. And that state agency can go into an area and assemble all of the, or basically be the taxable entity for the whole area, but that needs to happen with the approval of the authoritative municipality, if you will, whether that's a city or a county or whatever. So there's been a lot of cooperation, a lot of understanding, and a heck of a lot of meetings over there in the last couple of years.
So last we heard with regard to Mida, there were now two locations of where that hotel could go. Have they decided on one or the other?
There are, but they're both very close to each other. You know, they're within not even a quarter mile. They're both very close.
And access was really, I think, the choice that they had, whether or not everything goes to Snow Park or whether or not we get things off to the Sultan and Mayflower area.
Well, that part of it, Leslie, is there's only one option there. And that's one of the things that really makes us very excited is that with the existing gondola, as we all know, you hop on the gondola, the option to get back to the rest of the mountain is through Snow Park. With that entire project over there, the uphill access takes us up to Bald Mountain, so completely bypasses the Snow Park option. So if somebody wants to come to Snow Park, they can hop on the gondola. If somebody does not want to go through Snow Park, they can hop on one of the other lifts that provides lift access out of the bottom there.
All right, and that would happen at both locations then? At both of the Mida locations?
Yes. So we as a resort, Leslie, are looking at that project as one, even though there are four landowners, including us. But it's one project, and that's what's been very encouraging over the years is the level of cooperation through all the partners over there. And that's one thing that we did as a resort probably 3 or 4 years ago now was we went to all landowners and said, look, we really like this project, but it really needs to be master planned as one area. The first layer of the master plan needs to be the ski area, and then the appropriate development needs to be placed over that so that the ski area has the underlying preference, if you will. And everybody agreed, signed on, wrote a check for the master plan, and we all cooperated very well together.
So when's the new closing date?
Don't know yet. I believe it just got extended, but supposedly within the next 60 to 90 days.
Okay. It's not like we've been working on this for 20 years or something, though, so, right?
Exactly. Well, Ashley, so I started at Deer Valley a couple months before we opened, and that was 37 years ago. When we opened, that project was supposed to start within 2 years. So there you go. We have been working on it for a while.
Okay. Hey, Bob, anything else you want to mention?
Just to say thanks to everybody in town. It's just a glorious summer. I hope everybody's taking the chance and getting out and enjoying this wonderful place we get to live.
Okay. Hey, Bob, thanks for coming in.
Thank you, Leslie.
That's the KPCW News Time now, 844. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatch. Well, EATS, that's known as Eat Awesome Things at School, welcomes Janae Ridge at its new as its new executive director beginning July 1st. She joins me in the studio along with EATS board member Courtney Kaplan. Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Courtney, let's just start with you. You hired Janae because Ann is stepping down?
Ann's stepping down. She agreed to take on an unpaid ED role with us, executive director, for the past year, which we thank her very much. And she wanted to do that for a time, you know, defined period of time. So we started this process back in January with a committee of our executive director search committee with the plan to have a person coming on board July 1st. So we're thrilled that we stayed on that timeline and to welcome Janae.
Okay, so it's a full-time position that you've fundraised for, huh?
Yes, it's a full-time position, and partly we're excited with our success from Fork in the Road, our annual May fundraiser, which was held at Legacy Lodge this year, thanks to Vail's Epic Promise Grant. The community really, since EATS started, has been so positive and so supportive of what we've done, and we've been able to fundraise over the last year to be able to put this position into place. So, yes, a full-time position.
Great. So, Janae, tell us a little bit about yourself and why this is something you wanted to do.
Well, I grew up in Michigan. In the family I grew up in, we did not eat very good food. We ate a lot of fast food, a lot of boxed food, a lot of just convenience food. And I didn't find whole food until college, and that's something that I feel like every kid should know about much sooner in life. And that's something that I'm just passionate about getting that out there and getting people more connected to their food.
Okay. So why is this a job you think you can do? I mean, what's your background in nutrition? And
My very first food gig was I managed a farmer's market in Lansing, Michigan. Did that for a season. I've volunteered and done internships at a whole bunch of different gardens around the youth garden in Moab, for example, one in Hawaii. And then I spent the last 2.5 years working for the Green Urban Lunchbox in Salt Lake City. I was an AmeriCorps Vista there, and I did the resource and development, so the fundraising side of things for a year. And then I've been running the Fruit Share program for about a year and a half now.
So is that really the big job here at EATS is chief fundraiser for
yes.
you?
Yes.
Yeah.
I believe
I'm
so.
Gonna echo that. Yes, that's a big role, I think, as every executive director in town knows that is a big component of this. And Janae will have the board's support and doing that, but fundraising is a big component. And then being the public face of the organization is also a big part of this job.
So when you start in July, I mean, anything that you would like to do? I mean, something that you've brought to the board saying, I think this would be a good idea? Or
I think the main thing that I want is to get not only the board but also the community involved in those kind of decisions. I don't think it's something, especially not, you know, I'm not from Park City. I don't live here yet, you know. And I don't want to just come in and, you know, start making changes and stuff. I want to know what the community wants, what the board wants, what's needed, and then implement those kind of changes.
All right. So you'll work out of your home? Is that pretty much it?
We actually have an office coming, Leslie. I mean, this is bigger Boulder all the time. So we'll have an office out in Kimball Junction. We'll have two desks there, one for Janae and then also Kimberly Patterson, who's our program manager. And that will start kind of mid-July, third week of July. So we're thrilled to have kind of a base where Janae and Kimberly can work out of. But we'll still have a lot of those meetings in the coffee shops around town. That's part of, I think, what makes this community as well.
Yeah. Courtney, maybe you can talk a little bit about the success of EATS this past year, because it was the first year of a three-year rollout.
Yeah. So part of our role is advocacy for improved school food, and we're really excited and proud of the partnership that we've built with Park City School District, with the support of the school board, the administration there. We have, and also with communications around it, they're running a 15 to clean program where five unnecessary ingredients will come out of school food each year over 3 years. So the first five included things like high fructose corn syrup, and a number of different things that you don't necessarily want in school food. And then they've got the next five ready to roll out, and they will be out of school food by the end of next year. And I think it's new news that the district has hired an associate superintendent of wellness and then also a new nutrition services director who will start August 1st. I understand he's relocating from Seattle. But we're thrilled with the partnership we've been able to establish with the district, and I think it's also a groundswell from the community that you know, pulled this effort through with maybe our guidance that, you know, the community wants improved school food for everyone. Many people don't know that 1 in 4 students in Park City School District is on free and reduced lunch. So it's also really important to think about those students that don't necessarily have a choice with what they're eating while they're at school. So we want to make sure that this community is inclusive and that everyone has a great opportunity to eat great things at school.
So the school board just passed its budget. Mm-hmm. And was there money then in that budget for EATS to continue its goals here? Because that was a big part of it. Yeah?
So we're obviously a separate nonprofit that's working in partnership. And, you know, we have our programs running along with that advocacy that I mentioned. We have three primary programs in that we do cooking classes. We run school gardens in partnership with the district. And then we do taste tests. And it's my understanding that those taste tests called Adventure Bites this year will continue. We're excited to do those. Those have happened on a monthly basis. And then last year, the district rolled out 11 new recipes that were cooked on site by the district employees, by the cafeteria staff. And then the students got to vote on those. And if a recipe item got over a 75% approval rating, it then went on the lunch line. So those were, you know, done through taste tests during the lunches. Those will continue to our understanding. And then the district has committed to 8 new recipes for this school year. And then at least 50% of scratch cooking at the elementary school level. It's easier to quantify that versus the high school and junior high because there are more options coming into play there. But we're thrilled with over 50% of scratch cooking at the elementary school level. I mean, I think that's a huge statement for the district to make. And we're so excited that that's happening.
And that's what we know, is that it's more expensive to cook from scratch as it is to purchase the processed food. And so I think that was the school district's commitment then.
Yeah. And I think, you know, you saw that with the different labor contracts, and the labor hours, to our understanding, have gone up for food service employees, which I think, again, is a commitment to, they know that it takes more time to cook from scratch. And so they're putting that into the budget. Exactly.
Okay. Anything else you do want to mention?
The one thing I'd love to mention, in addition to Janae starting, is that our community event, which is called Dinner in the Garden, Dig In, which is in conjunction with Summit Community Gardens, will happen this year on September 10th. We've sent a save the date, but it is a dinner held at Summit Community Gardens, and it's celebrating the family meal. So stay tuned for more information around that. But we're excited to be able to present a community event like that later in the summer.
Okay, Courtney Kaplan and Janae Ridge, thanks for your time.
Thank you, Leslie.
Well, as we've reported, Park City Municipal has instituted a fireworks and open fire ban, as well as some restrictions on ammunition. In the studio with an update, I have the chief building official and fire code official David Thacker, along with emergency manager Hugh Daniels. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Leslie.
So it's looking pretty green and lush out there. Why the ban? Hugh?
Well, we had a lot of good moisture this year. However, the mid-level and low-level moisture snow melted pretty quick, and we've had pretty consistent high temperatures and low humidity. and we're starting to see things turn brown. And while it's kind of a, I think everybody would agree, it's kind of a moderate fire hazard at this time. We just had a fire in Soldier Hollow. We've got one in Strawberry. We have a huge one down in the south part of the state. There's one in Alpine. Fires happen during moderate times as well. So grass is starting to dry out pretty quick. You can see it along the freeway. You're starting to see it in town now. We need to get the message out before the 4th so people have plenty of time. And we've always kind of been on the conservative side. You know, it's a big natural disaster for us. I mean, look what's happening in Bryanhead. That's just unbelievable. And it's also an economic disaster for us if we have a big fire. And little fires become big fires very, very quick. So we felt it was appropriate based on the environmental hazards to move forward with a ban this year.
Yeah, and I can't really remember the last time we could have fireworks. It's been 4 or 5 years,
four
maybe?
4 or 5 years,
yeah. So why not just ban them for good?
The state won't let us do that. The state code specifically allows cities to only ban fireworks when there are environmental hazards that can be justified. So for us, cities can do that. The county, it's even further restrained. They can't make that decision at all. It's made by the state forester in forestry, fire, and state lands in unincorporated areas. So he's the person who can – is the only person in the state who can do bans in unincorporated area.
So, David, was that something you had to approach the state about, getting some kind of approval or sign-off on this?
No, not for the city itself. Mm-hmm. The groundwork had been done last year as staff had approached council and put together a policy and got that placed into ordinance so that the approvals could be done through our office as opposed to going through council again, and we can make that decision based on the atmospheric and environmental conditions that we run across.
Okay, it just has to be done on an annual basis.
That's correct.
Yeah. So there's no line that we can see that we know they step over into the Snyderville Basin, which is then governed by the state forestry. How do people know what's allowed and what's not?
Well, through KPCW, through the park record, we get the message out the best we can. Certainly the fire district, as you heard from Chief Hewitt last week, he wants to know anytime there's any smoke or anything anyone sees. Fire does not follow borders, that's for sure. You know, another thing that we have in town, maybe more so than the county, is we have a whole lot of visitors that maybe aren't used to being in the mountains or aware of wildland interface and how dangerous it can be. So, I mean, we think we need to get that message out. Would we personally like to see it in the county? Yeah, probably so. But we just don't have that ability the way the state has set it up.
Yeah. Will there be firework booths still set up? I mean,
we haven't had
still sold
in
stores.
An approved firework booth in the city as long as I can remember, and I've been here a long time.
Oh, I remember one out in front of Alpha Beta back in the day.
Yeah.
But
don't remember that one. But certainly you're seeing them already down in the state. Our local markets generally don't carry fireworks. They can sell them. It's not illegal to sell them. They just cannot be set off inside the city limits.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that because there were some limits on ammunition, but we can't shoot firearms within the city limit anyway. So why do you have to attach this?
That's part of the state code. It just goes in hand with the other things as far as open ignition. So it's tied to that open ignition piece. So it's, you know, it's campfires and, you know, fire pits without that aren't permitted, that don't have arresters on the top of them, all that type of stuff. So that's all tied in that same piece of the state code.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the people have those chimeneas and stuff. Those are illegal then because it's just a ceramic flute?
So they're required to be permitted, and those that have been permitted and do have spark arresters installed on the equipment itself will be allowed to be used during this fire ban. Should they have not been permitted or they don't have that spark arrester, then they cannot be used and we'll be out doing some monitoring as closely as we can.
So give us an idea of what a spark arrester is. I mean, it's a metal, something metal within the chimney or something?
Yeah, it can be within, but a lot of them are over the top. They cover the top as the smoke leaves the chimney or the chimenea, if you will, and it catches any embers that might be flying out through that chimney and keeps them from migrating to another area where they could start a fire.
All right. I mean, and then when you think about those fire pits that have just the screens over them, mm-hmm. that is a spark arrester?
Correct. Yeah. They work as a spark arrester, so the screens will need to be kept over them, which also kind of limits the size that a fire can be with if it's got that dome cover on it as well.
And real quickly, we should note that barbecues are still allowed, propane and briquette.
Correct.
So just no open fire cooking.
That's correct. Our main concern is to just, you know, if there is question, please give our office a call. The building department, we can help out at 435-615-5100. We'd be happy to answer any questions. We have inspection staff available as well that could come out and take a look at anything you might have question about and be able to advise and assist with approval processes if we need to do that.
Okay. Ban isn't in effect between now and when?
Until it's rescinded. So until the fire code official decides that the environmental hazards have decreased to the point that he can rescind it.
All right. And then?
And we are evaluating those conditions on a biweekly basis. So we get together, we look at all the conditions, ensure that we're continuing to have the ban in act with the proper restrictions behind it or the requirements behind it. And then once those conditions subside, we'll go ahead and rescind that ban.
Okay. Class B misdemeanor. So definitely some fines and the potential of
having
for
to pay
a fire.
To put, pay to put it out. The fire right now down in Bryan Head is at about $6 million.
Mm-hmm. And they're going to go after that guy, have you heard?
I don't know, but I wouldn't be surprised.
Okay. Hey, Hugh, David, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.